This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Here on Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub, and two of the MGO Blog Roundtable crew. No Brian Cook today. That doesn't mean we can't have a roundtable because we still have Craig Ross. We still have Seth Fisher. Guys, good morning. How are you?
Hi, how are you doing? You know, I see all these shows, they're all roundtables. Maybe we need to be something else, like an oblong table or the MGO blog log table, because no one could actually pronounce that. I don't know. And you know what Brian is doing? Brian is working on his beam routine. This is a little understood fact that Brian is actually pretty good at gymnastics. And so he decided incredible. He has a beam out.
He is incredible.
Yeah, I know.
We have to have another MGO blog event so you guys can all watch them.
We have determined on this show that no guy will ever participate in the beam.
Yeah, Mike Spass said, he said, man, they're walking up and down the beam. And when he said it, I mean, they obviously do a lot more than walking up and down the beam. He mentioned that they flip. But for us, just walking on the beam, off would be a feat. So an amazing, amazing accomplishment for the Michigan Women's Gymnastics Program. As I've said many times before, the seventh team to ever do it. Coach, Bev, the seventh coach to ever win it now in 40 seasons of women's gym. It's akin to what Hutch accomplished on the softball side of things in 05, winning the first championship east of the Mississippi. And Seth, you said something interesting in the break that I think is worthy of discussion here. Mm-hmm. As Bev said, I hope the Big Ten Network, puts us on more. You can see them on Big Ten Network Plus. I don't get the point of Big Ten Network Plus. I mean, there are a couple of softball games on Big Ten Network Plus, right, this week. Mm-hmm. Why? Why? What? I mean, how much money could they be making off Big Ten Network Plus? Why not just grow the viewership of those sports by putting them on? If you have to, do it on BTN.com, just put it on that way and grow the viewership.
We're media producers, and I can see exactly what they're doing. The idea is we don't want to put any effort towards this thing. There's a captive audience because these sports have people who are diehards, right? I'm a diehard Michigan hockey fan. Wherever you put Michigan hockey, I'll pay the $15, $20, whatever I got to do to watch it. Whatever quality it is, I'm there. There's no way to get rid of me. And that's what they've done. They know that they have a captive audience. They can put like no money towards this thing, and that's what they can get. And it's like, okay, if we want to put absolutely zero effort into something and have some trickle of money, that makes sense. But they are leaving a lot on the table, and it's awful, awful for the athletic department, because these sports can't grow anywhere. You can't, like, if you're not a huge, huge hockey fan or a huge, huge softball fan or women's basketball, like, you cannot. You're not going to get into this. It's not going to be worth it financially. You can't like watch the. They bring the like on away games. They bring in like the radio guys from the other station, right? So like if you're watching Michigan State, Michigan State game, you're listening to like Michigan State radio guys hating on Michigan while the players are on the ice. It's just like it's terrible.
Hey, so I've never done Big Ten Network Plus. Is it an a la carte thing where so if you do Big Ten Network Plus for hockey, it's only hockey. You don't get it for all the other sports.
I think I'd have to look, but I have it. But I just have it for Michigan games. I know I think I got hockey this year, and I think I got softball and baseball, and it's fairly expensive. But if I want to watch, say, Ohio State, Illinois in softball, no, I'd have to pay some separate fee. So all I get is Michigan stuff in some designated sports, and I think it's about $15 a month, which is absurd for the production that goes into it, because the production value is you know, what the 10-year-old kids next door could do.
Well, that's why Grace likes it, because Grace basically could produce what she watches when she watches the women's basketball games on there. But that's the only reason why we have it. We have it for women's basketball for Grace, so that she can watch, you know, when the girls are not playing at home. You know, this year, obviously, for all the games. But so it's a la carte. That's the only reason why we even watch it. It's really good for that in the context of we see the games. But right. Everything else you're talking about is spot on. The production quality and everything else, they could put a lot more into it. And I don't think it would cost a lot more to put some quality production into it. But they just don't seem to care, as long as they can cash people's checks.
Right. I think they figure they probably don't have huge revenues, but they have no costs. And I mean, are very limited costs. So it's just essentially free money, as far as I can tell. I mean, I was watching a game, I think it was a softball game earlier this year in the spring. And I think the camera guy or whatever that passed off as a camera guy was drunk, because the camera was going all over the place. It was basically unwatchable. I was getting seasick watching the game. There was no announcer. They had no score posted. They had one camera view, except it was like swinging all over the place. And they're charging me for this. I mean, it's so bad. And as I think Bev just pointed out, they had 808,000 watching the NCAAs on gymnastics. It was, I don't know. I watched, I mean, I don't know anything about gymnastics. Brian Cook does, but I don't know anything about gymnastics. But I like watching it because it's an unusual sport in that not only are these participants, these athletes, incredibly strong, but they're unbelievably flexible. And so the training involved has to be just remarkable to have that level of both flexibility and strength. It's spectacular. And at the end of this meet, for people who don't know, it looked like Oklahoma was going to win. They were on the floor exercise, which by my understanding is easier to score higher. And Michigan was on the beam, which is a place where wobbles and falls just demolish your score. And Michigan had their last three athletes had to just nail it. And all three of them did. I mean, it was like watching the Olympics, really, in that quality of gymnastics. So it truly was remarkable. I would watch more. I would watch more, particularly. And it seems to me the Big Ten Network should do some sort of deal where they have three or four teams together.
There must be a tiered system, because we got this message from Mark Lewis, who's watching us on Facebook Live right now. He says, I have Big Ten Network Plus or BTN Plus for the whole Big Ten for $120 a year. Is good for every sport and every team.
Okay, well, maybe I should do that, because I'm paying more than that for just Michigan on a monthly basis. So it may be a consumer failure by me. I don't know. But I'm definitely paying more than $120.
I don't want to encourage it, because I cannot stand the business model, right? There's no way to grow the sports. If you're going to have a tiny subscription model like that for a god-awful program, then there's no reason for more fans to come in, right? Like, if you're getting excited about the hockey team because we got a bunch of draft picks and we've won the last two games and it's Friday night and we're playing Ohio State and it's like, okay, I want to watch this. And you go to sign up, and there's no way to just get that one game, right? Then you have to either sign up for the sport, follow that team, follow that program, or pay $120 and do it all year, right then when you want to watch one game. There's no way to get into the sport. And like the way that Notre Dame has with NBC is great, because you can just go to NBC.com the night that they're playing and turn on the game, and it's great quality, and like, I watched probably as much Notre Dame hockey this year as I watched Michigan hockey. Not because they were any good, not because they're watchable. Notre Dame is completely unwatchable. They sink into their end and just like shut down the game. But because like you can turn it on, it's there. It's good quality and it's good hockey.
Yeah, and I don't get the you're not seeing the forest for the trees. This is the same conversation that we have about the NCAA and just women's sports in general. You know, put the resources towards growing the sport. What you put in, I think you'll get back out. But you'll always be it'll be this perpetual sort of fan base of diehard with no one else ever really joining except on the rare occasion that in this instance you win a national championship. I think Michigan is definitely going to have more eyes, but if they're on BTN, it'll be by a magnitude greater if you do that. So we'll see if they get the picture. But guys, we can actually, I put this question to Mike Spath earlier. I never got your spring takeaways. Like, you know, coming out of spring football, looking ahead to fall camp, maybe what's your biggest takeaway from spring ball? And your biggest question mark heading into the fall. Now, removing quarterback from the equation, because Matt Weiss has since come out and said, just, you know, Cade McNamara is the guy, which everything we heard coming out of spring ball suggested he was the most consistent performer. So that being the case, biggest takeaway from the spring question mark heading into fall camp, Craig Ross.
Yeah, I'd like a semi rant on this, and you can stop me if I go out of bounds, but remember when John Beilein came into Michigan basketball, and Michigan basketball had been a dog for just a long time. It felt like forever for me as a person who's a diehard basketball fan. And Beilein was smart enough to understand that he needed to engage the media and fans. And so when he came in, he did these, maybe you were a part of these, Sam, these little... These little things where he had the media do sort of ersatz games. So you'd go out on the court and then you'd go into the locker room and he'd have like a box score. He'd be yelling at us, Ross, you know, too many turnovers, you know, whatever it was. So he did this little simulated game. And then the next year he put people through drills. Mm-hmm. Right, basketball drills, and they matched me up with Eric Lacy, who was an actual basketball player by my guess, because he could do all these two ball stuff, and I couldn't do the two ball stuff very well. I was almost a disaster, but I could do the 3-point shooting more or less. So I'm standing out there shooting, and I make a couple of threes, and Beilein wanders over, and he gets into my ear. And he starts saying, I don't think you're going to make another one of these. I don't think you're going to make, right? And so, you know, and it was great. You know, it was just incredible amounts of engagement. And he realized this is something he needed to do, because here's the truth. The media is the interface between the program and, you know, between the program and the fans. That's why the media exists, and the fans make the game, because nobody wants to go. Who wants to go play a Michigan wants to have a Michigan football game in an empty stadium, or who wants to wander into Chrysler Arena when there's 10 people there? I mean, it now just becomes the city league, but there's the media is important. And fans are important, because both make the game. And so football, to me, I went back and looked and I said, okay, we were 2-4 last year. How bad of a 2-4 season was it? Well, we beat Rutgers in 3 overtimes and we had a win against Minnesota, which was a good win, I think, and perceived as such at the beginning. But we got cranked by Indiana by 17. We just got humiliated by Wisconsin by 38 at home, and it probably wasn't that close. We got beat by 10 at home by Penn State, and we lost at home to a terrible MSU team that was a complete meatball. I mean, this was a bad season. Forget about COVID. It was as bad as it gets. And so I went back and looked, how has Michigan done? We're 11-10 in our last 21 games. And that's with that overtime win against Rutgers in three, a two overtime win against Army, another win against Rutgers. We beat Middle Tennessee State. Illinois was terrible. Maryland was terrible. I mean, we're 11-10 with six wins that don't really mean very much. I mean, or they mean something, but they were not against good teams. So it would seem to me, and that's okay. I mean, I can deal with losing. I've been a Cleveland fan, baseball fan my whole life. I mean, I understand losing. And so...
You're talking to Lions fans, you know?
Yeah.
Pointing that out.
And Sam has turned me into a Lions fan. In honor of Sam Webb, I've become a Lions fan. And Johnny Manziel turned me away from the Cleveland Browns. That was it for me. But the, you know, so it would seem like out of all this, the football program would say, you know, we really need to engage the fans and we really need to engage the media. That because we're not doing so well, and instead they have a non-spring. They have a spring game where nobody can show up except some family people. Now Illinois, who's terrible forever, had a spring game, and I think it was on TV. Ohio State, you know, our supposed rival, did it. Michigan State, I think, is going to have a spring game that's going to be televised. Is Michigan's spring game televised? No. In fact, what Michigan should have been doing was not only should they have at least been televising it, and not only should Sam Webb and whoever else, you know, Brian Cook be at the spring game, they should be footnoting it. They should have a couple of coaches saying, here's what we're trying to do on that play, and here's why it worked or didn't work. And they need to engage the fans in a way where fans have never been engaged in the past. And instead, we're getting 20. Let me not exaggerate. We're getting a minute and 10 seconds worth of tape looking at the color, looking at the color of the jerseys. Come on.
The videos. Yeah, the videos were a little comical because you could see anything.
You could see nothing. You got nothing out of those videos except.
Let me be devil's advocate for.
Okay, I need devil's advocate.
Understand. This coming from a guy who has openly advocated for some coaching duties in the spring game, right? I mean, yeah. Ira and I, we were full fledged. Hey, they're doing it in Florida State. Let us coach the fourth stringers. Let us coach the walk ons for a series, right? So. That would have been awesome, but let's come at this from Jim Harbaugh's perspective. Not that he was even ever considering this, but isn't it the case that everything to do with the offseason, you have a huge swath of fans saying, don't say anything. I don't want to hear anything from you until the fall. Enough talking, this stuff about, don't say anything about who's looking good in practice. I don't want to hear anything about, you know, this new play or this new scheme. Show me on the field. You got a whole bunch of fans that are saying that. And if you open it up and you are clearly on defense, especially you're in a rebuild mode on defense, if it looks like that on the field, all of this angst, all of this frustration, all of this pessimism that is already out there, does that not get amplified if they go out there in the spring and you got everyone there watching them look like, hey, they're still learning on the job? Is that counterproductive if you do that?
I mean, asking me, no. I mean, what is sports about, Sam? What is it about? It's about hope. And, you know, and I'm not saying the coaches have to oversell what they have or oversell their program. But they need to sell hope because that's what the game is. That's what these games are about. Otherwise, no one really cares. Gosh darn it!
That's Jim Harbaugh calling you right now.
This should not be. I should not be saying this to an athlete. It should be the other way around. Don't listen to the haters. right? Like, you got people being negative. We got, you know, people are always going to be negative. When people are moved to say something, it's usually because they have something negative to say. And if they're not moved to say something, it's usually because they're, like, either bearing it or have something positive or don't want to get, you know, harassed out of whatever they want to say, right? Don't listen to your haters. The people who love you want to see Michigan football. That's why, that's what being a fan is, right? And, like, there's nothing that makes people feel better than sitting in the stadium. I know it's during a pandemic, and I totally understand if you want to just, like, cancel it this year for safety, especially given the rates they are right now, right? Like, Michigan State inviting people to their stadium seems a little not smart right now to me. But, like, the more you can invite people in, and Sam was and Craig, you guys are right on this. The more you invite people in, the more they feel part of it, the more they feel invested, and the more they feel like they want you to succeed as opposed to sitting on the outside sniping at you. And one way to invite them inside is to show them the product. People are always so much more excited about the football team, even when they're losing, during the season, because there's another moment where you're in it. You can do it. You can have it again. It's after we lose to Ohio State and the whole thing shuts down. That's when everyone gets really sad.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, guys. Again, like I said, this is the guy who said, "Hey, let us coach. Let the media members coach." But if I again coming from this side, Jimmy Whitner just sent this message in. He said, "Craig, why do that when fans are just going to say, so what? Just beat Ohio State." That contingent is very loud right now.
I agree. It's loud. But let me give an example, I guess. Brian Cook and I, a number of years ago, went to a coaching clinic out in Westland or someplace. We're trying to, Seth is as a fan, is a football expert, no doubt. I mean, Seth knows more about the X's and O's of football than almost anybody probably covering the game. And Brian knows it too, knows a lot too. But, you know, I went out and I should know more. I'm always saying I should know more. And Lloyd, to his credit, heard me say this and said, okay, we'll try and help you learn. I'll let you know, as I mentioned, I think at least once on the show, I had the opportunity to sit in a quarterback session with Chad Henne and Scott Leffler. Now, I was promised the secrecy. I couldn't tell anybody about it, but eventually when Lloyd retired, he let me write about it, and I wrote about it in my second book, and I think it's one of my most fun chapters in that book, is talking about, well, what's it really like in one of these meetings? Uh-huh. But I went out and I watched this coaching clinic with Brian, and he went into Madison's, and it was Michigan coaches, quite a few of them. And he went into Madison's sections, but I always like talking to the offensive line coaches. The offensive line coaches to me are always the most interesting. What they do is the most interesting. And from my way of thinking. And so I sat through two sessions of Daryl Funk going through. I love Daryl Funk. I mean, I love how he teaches. I loved how he talks to people. I love how he would talk to me, even though I was a complete bonehead, and I would go ask him questions, and he would, you know, and it was heartbreaking for me when Funk lost his job, because I was bought in. I was bought into him and what they were doing. And the same for Brady Hoke. It killed me because Brady Hoke was a genuine guy who was willing. I'm in a coaching clinic with my brother John and I. We're at Chrysler. And we're sitting at a table waiting for lunch, and we're getting as far away from the coaches as we can because we're not really supposed to be there.
and we got to take a break.
Okay,
yeah, we got to take a break. I'll say as we do, you're gonna be devil's advocate one more time. Fans say, look, it's not about who you like, Cricket Man. Look, I love Brady to this day. That's my guy. You talk about heartbreaking. I remember. Sitting with him, man, it was a few days before the hammer came down. Yeah. He said, what do you think they're going to do? I said, man, I think they're going to fire you. He was like, no, you know, I don't. He said, I don't think so. I think, you know, this guy, talking about Dave Brandon, he sort of gets it. It's like, no, man, no. And what did they do? They went ahead and fired him. My point is, he was one of the most likable guys ever.
Agreed.
Right? I mean, I don't know anyone who ever got to know Brady who didn't like him. Right? But at the end of the day, you don't get paid based on how much they like you. I'm sure that's what Jim would say. I don't give a bleep. They don't give a at the end of the day. They can like me a ton. They can love me. If I don't win games, you know what they're gonna say? Get us another coach. That's what the majority of fans are gonna say. So Craig, I'm with you. I would love to cover it more. I love to coach, but if you're looking at it from their perspective, I could see how they would look at it and say, more exposure, more eyes, when we are clearly working to install, to build. I mean, it's going to look like that. It's going to look like that on defense, especially at times. Is that going to lead to people saying, wow, I'm excited about that? I know there are a lot of fans, a lot of media members that would use that as an opportunity to hurl more shots than they're already hurling. But chew on that for a moment. We got to get you a break. Right. Let you respond. And that was my devil's advocate moment. I still want to coach. And if anyone over there is listening, you know, I'm sure Seth wants to as well. You know,
No. I don't want to coach. I've been asked before.
If they said, Seth Fisher, we're going to let you call a series at the end of the game.
All right, yeah, I would do that. Yeah.
Third stringers and walk-ons in the spring. You wouldn't do it?
No. I do that, but like coaching is hard, man. I know lots of coaches. Being coach is really hard.
I'm not talking about a real game.
Okay.
I'm talking about
you want to call plays. You want to, yeah.
I'd
love to call plays. That's why I have a video game for it.
All right, we need to get to a break. We'll pick this discussion up on the other side here on the Michigan Insider, MGO Blog Roundtable, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, The Ticket.
Clear on radio.
All right.
Hey, man, I was about to launch into my whole thing about coaching is not calling plays. Fans think coaching is calling plays. That's like the tiniest tip of the iceberg.
Right, but
that's
part of I would call this the ingrained provenance of football. That coaches want to make sure that fans are as ignorant as possible. No, I'm serious. Michigan. I mean, Lloyd was different. Lloyd was very different because if you showed some interest in the actual game and what was going on, he would try and make sure you got it if you were serious about it. And but for most coaches, it's a benefit for them. I think they perceive it as a benefit for fans to be as ignorant as possible because then, you know, then it's harder to question what's going on.
I don't know that it's purposeful. I think it is just too labor intensive to educate the fans to the point where they could really seriously assess what you're doing. And that, you know, to your point, it may be beneficial for them to not be knowledgeable, but I think it's a time thing. I mean, look, most fans, the football knowledge is so far away from any medium. Well, man,
it's too bad that they don't have a fan base that would support a nerdy blog that gets into all these details.
Well, I mean,
if they had a fan base who actually cared about football so much that they would like make a site with like a million readers who are like really into this stuff all the time, and you could just like feed them information. Well, imagine if you could get around it. You don't have to do any work.
I'll give you.
You guys get credit.
I'll give you an example. Because my guy is, I think you guys know, Al Borges is my dude. Mm. Al Borges let him go blog in. Mm-hmm. And you went deep with him on some plays and so on and so forth. And Al Borges is one of the most criticized. Man, I still get people saying, you're doing analysis with Al Borges? Yeah. And he's more knowledgeable than anyone. I mean, you couldn't get more knowledgeable in assessing football. But people, they're caught up in, I don't like that guy. Some are. Anyway, so it did nothing. The increased knowledge of what he was doing and why did nothing to increase the appeal That increased knowledge had nothing to do with
it. That's not true at all. That's not true at all. We gave him credit for game plans against Ohio State, game plans against
Notre Dame. I know you did. No. Yeah. I'm not saying.
But I mean, he let Haco in, right? And I remember we got back in the car after the 2012 game, okay? And he put Denard under center, and like that, you have to, anyone can admit that was a play calling disaster. Right? Like, Michigan lost that game in a lot of ways, but one of them was just the offensive coordinating was terrible. And Ace had just, you know, blown up you can go back and look at what he actually said, but I think it was very short and very curt and saying it was like, this is the worst game I've ever seen coached or something, and that was it. That was his recap. And we get in the car, and Haco has just got this look on his face like, you just destroyed me. Like, you know, he it mattered to him. Like, Al Borges mattered a lot to him.
I mean, well, Al can take look. I don't think it was a play to be liked as much as it was a play to increase understanding. My point is that increase in understanding did nothing to increase the appreciation or appeal of Al Borges. It did nothing. I mean, it did inform you guys more. It informed your coverage more. But how did it benefit him? So, guys, we carried the discussion into the break about the benefit. Because first of all, Craig, I am with you in spirit. My perspective on this is from that of the media, from that of the fans saying, let's get some more access. You know, let's get on the sideline at least during the spring. And I would put some work into it. Even if you just give us a play sheet with four plays, do you know how much time and effort I would put into situational play calling for the walk-ons in that regard? I am right there with you. I think it would be outstanding. But if I'm looking at it from the coaching perspective, and I gave the Al Borges example, I want to give you, Seth, and you, Craig, the opportunity to respond on air to what I mentioned in the break. Al Borges let him go blog in, let Haco in, really got deep into talking about plays and philosophy, and really informed your coverage and your coverage of Michigan, your coverage of the offense under Al Borges was really detailed, more detailed than what anyone else was doing. I don't think that did anything to increase the appeal for Al Borges in a tangible way. So while it was great for fans and great for MGo Blog, was that great for Al Borges?
I think it was. I would argue, because I remember our coverage, and I remember writing about Al Borges at the time, and like how we were looking for things after he did that interview, and we put that in Hail the Victors, and it was like a big thing for us, right? And I was really excited to get it. And after we did that interview, we were always looking for ways to highlight things that Borges was good at. I wrote articles about how his offense is supposed to work and what they were thinking about doing. We started putting all the coach pressers on the site and like highlighting which questions that Haco asked and kind of had this back and forth. And I think that, you know, I don't know how much we can affect things, but it probably put off MGo Blog turning on Al Borges and saying, well, you got to get rid of this guy. For at least a year. Like, he gave him at least a season where we were biased for him just because he'd given us that access. And that's not something we're supposed to do. We're supposed to try to provide the best information that we can. I just know that, like, we're not gold, right? This is what people do. People have biases. And that gave us a bias that probably, changed our coverage of him. Now, ultimately, you know, he coached the 2012 Ohio State game. There's nothing you can do with a guy after that, right? Like that, just nothing could have saved him after that. And he lasted another year.
I guess I disagree that was responsible for giving him another year. I think maybe it increased the appreciation with some of the fan base. But I think if you look at it from his perspective, and I've never asked him this question. And that's my guy. That's my, I admit. And I tell people now we are going to take, you know, the segments with Borges, the film breakdowns that we got into last year to another level. But that's despite some of the replies that we still get where people man, Borges is terrible. Who is this guy? And he knows 1,000 times more football than anyone offering that critique. Like, even
he put Denard under center. Denard Robinson under center.
Yes, he did. But who else listening to Al Borges even had the opportunity to do that? They weren't even in position to do that. A guy who's been an OC at UCLA and where was he been? He's UCLA, he's Oregon, he's Michigan, he's Auburn. I mean, this guy is a seasoned vet calling plays. So I don't care how many mistakes he may have made in his final act here at Michigan, he has forgotten 1,000 times more football than anyone critiquing him.
27 for 27. Do you remember these things? Like, there's no doubt Al Borges is not a caliber of offensive coordinator that that should be coaching at Michigan. I don't think there's any doubt. Is he much better coached than I am? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But there's a caliber between, you know, the difference between Al Borges and me is huge. The difference between Al Borges and what you need to be the offensive coordinator at a place like Michigan is also huge.
But I guess that to me is kind of not the point that I'm getting at. What I'm saying is, by letting you in, did he gain, because this is what the argument from Craig is, they will benefit from allowing fans to see how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
Even when it's at its grimiest point, which is where they are right now. When you talk about, hey, they brought in an entirely new defense and they're piecing together philosophies from a couple of guys, and they're trying to fit the talent that's on the roster to this new scheme or tailor the scheme to the talent that's on the roster. That's not always pretty. And you already have people that are highly pessimistic about where they are. You got a contingent of fans that don't even think that Jim should have gotten a chance to remake this thing. And so now you're going to allow that skepticism a deeper view, a possibility of increasing that skepticism. Beneficial to you?
What are they going to find? What is going to change their minds, right? Are they're going to see that your outside linebackers have no idea what they're doing because Hutchinson's not in right now? And that's going to be what makes them mad when they already want you fired? There's nothing to lose. All you can gain, it's incremental. I don't want to pretend like we could get Al Borges fired, okay? It's just small things. But I do know that when I write a neck sharpies about like what this play was and what the people who come and read it, and there are lots of them, just want to know. They just want to know what the thought process is. If it seems like there's an intelligence behind it, and this makes sense, and this is like a long-term project, some people who are open to it might buy in. The people who are just going to be criticizing are just going to be criticizing.
See, here's the other thing that I find with coaches is that it's, you know, they feel like even whether it's, you know, any sort of analysis that doesn't come from a place of having done it before. It's not that it isn't constructive. It's not that it doesn't have some knowledge, but they always are like, man, this is just so ill-informed. Now, could you open the door more and inform the analysis? Sure you could, but for it to really be beneficial, I think you'd be doing that on a weekly basis, because I had this experience even whether it was Al or you know, after who was right after Al Jed, yo, any of these guys,
it wasn't Jed, it was Nussmeier.
Yeah, well, after Brady, after those guys came in. Yeah, and so when Jim came, you know, you talk to the OCs and they look at some of this analysis and they're like, man, I mean, we get that,
yeah,
routinely. And it's one of the things that made me say, and this is just my personal thing, that I always want a coach to kind of inform. So I, for instance, I'll always hit Vance Bedford up and like, Vance, what do you think of this defensively? Because I can, just so many experiences with coaches being like, what the hell is this? this is so wrong. This is so, and it could be like everything that's said there makes sense. And the coach is like, this is just absolute gobbledygook, so to speak. So my point is that coaches, even when there is analysis out there that seems more informed to the fan base, they feel like, man, this is not helpful to me. This is not helpful to me because in order to inform it, we're going to have to be doing this all the time, number one. And then number two, does it really help me? Now, I'm coming at it from the opposite side. I'm saying I'm with you, Craig. Look, man, at the end of the day, fans are going to be fans. And I'm just in it to, as much as you can, try to increase and enhance the fan experience. But that's out of concern for them more so than it is me. Like, if I did that, I'm not thinking about this is going to help me. I'm thinking about, hey, this is cool for the fans. It's part of enhancing their experience. But I don't know that I would be thinking I'd be getting anything out of it if I'm a coach. And that's just based on talking to a bunch of coaches.
Well, I just think, you know, my point of view is just, hey, there's nothing to be lost by having coaches try and have a more educated, or try and help and have a more educated fan base. Because I think the more educated the fan base is, the better off you are. Because you have to appreciate that the fans are the game to a large extent. And having a more educated, thoughtful fan base is a plus. And having coaches, I mean, Juwan is incredible. Why? I mean, he's in very different than Beilein in a lot of ways, but Juwan has a certain emotional intelligence. But
he's a very secretive guy. Like, he'll be in.
He is secretive. But he doesn't want to give a lot of detail about sort of what he's doing. Right, he feels like it helps the opposition too much, but he does other things that are so emotionally intelligent. For example, I'm in Hawaii, and I decide I'm going to do this presser. I'm going to do one of the Zoom presser, and I'm at the Zoom presser, and I don't really know Juwan, very much at all. And he gets done with his press conference, and right at the end, he goes, hey, wait a minute, because in my background, you can see the palm trees over my lanai. And he goes, wait a minute, Craig, where are you? Right? And so just saying that was like saying to all the media people, hey, I sort of care about you guys. You know, I care about, I'm interested. And, you know, and when you do even a small thing like that, what happens is, You get people to want to be on your side.
And
Juwan is such an emotionally intelligent man, and I mean, he understands other people.
I think winning makes that kind of support more palatable to the fans. If he had come in and they were 10th place in the Big Ten,
yeah.
If this year, they barely made the tournament as opposed to winning the Big Ten, with the level of support be the same. And
winning is winning, right? That's always going to be true. And winning just makes it easy, right? Everyone's going to care what Nick Saban has to say about X's and O's. And that's why he's ubiquitous. Everyone goes to his stuff. Everyone shares his videos. Everyone uses Saban's terminology because he wins, right? But that's the easy part. You're in a part where you're not going to win. Now what do you do?
All right, so a couple of responses to this conversation. Yeah. We got Zeke, who says, plenty of us fans are tired of hearing the complaining and happy they didn't show anybody anything. Then there's this from Steel Bill that came in, who said, I think the idea that anything positive could come from watching a spring game is ludicrous, using Luda.
Ludicrous.
Isn't that a rapper?
Yeah, that's a rapper. He said, our fans, i.e. me, don't have any appetite for what could be perceived as hype. I get that a lot, guys, a lot.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that won't be a response and a legitimate response from a lot of fans, which is, hey, I don't care about anything, just win, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm not that fan. And I have a hunch other people are like me because I talk to a lot of people who come and ask me this sort of stuff. Like, what are they trying to do? How come we didn't get to see a spring game? How come they're not, you know, how come we're not getting the sort of information that that helps us understand what's going on in this program? You know, I get a lot of that. And I think there's a lot of fans who are willing to suspend judgment and to buy in if they have some a greater understanding of what's happening. And when you show fans 1 minute of video out of the entire spring,
right,
that or whatever it was, bad. You know, I mean, I think people are just going to say.
Because here's the thing, they were vanilla in the spring game anyway, right? I mean,
but so what?
They were vanilla anyway, so.
That's right. So they're not going to, it's not like, you know, showing like 1 minute of a spring game is going to kill them in their old plays.
Show us some big plays, right? You know, like a touchdown, big. There are a few big plays in the spring game. Showing those, I get where you look. I want to be clear. I'm really on your side.
I know you're playing devil's advocate.
Would be better, but
there are lots of fans who are like, look, I don't even want to deal with this right now because it's depressing. It was a bad 2-4 season. It doesn't look like the team's gonna be any good this year. You're replacing Don Brown with 2 first-time coordinators. Sure, it's not going to get better right away, okay? But, like, what do you have? What do you have to work with right now? Well, my 7-year-old's a Michigan fan, and she just wants to put on her Michigan gear and watch and turn on the game for a day and cheer with Daddy. She's not going to care about any of, like, the X's and O's. But if you don't put that on there, if you don't have any spring game, if you don't have any access for people who just want to interact with you on positive terms, all you get is the negative. The only people who get to talk about Michigan right now are the people who are coming on wanting to say nasty things in recruiting.
No doubt. This is a great – see, didn't I tell you guys we'd have something to talk about?
I have a stack here. I've got Michigan baseball, Michigan softball, which are both having interesting seasons. Men's tennis, women's tennis are both having interesting seasons. I got recruiting stuff on all 4 programs. We could go another week, right?
Yeah, we could go another week, especially if you come back on saying, hey, let Sam and Ira get some coaching in next year.
Absolutely.
I think our assignment would be everybody's got to have a scripted – everyone's got to have a drive scripted. 1 offensive drive based off Michigan plays. Be ready to go.
At the end, we're talking about the scout teamers. Yeah, let's go. Let's get it. They did it down in Florida State, and Andrea Adelson said it was unbelievable. Unbelievable experience. It really is going to inform her coverage more, to the point that you were just making, Craig. But anyway, you know, we'll see. We can hope. That'll do it for today's show. We just agreed to another week of the roundtable, so you'll be able to tune into that next week. I am signing off until next week. I am going to get shot number two. So hopefully I don't experience I don't have a Seth Fisher experience or the Ira Weintraub experience. Both of you guys are Moderna guys, right?
No, I'm Pfizer.
Ah, damn it.
Good luck, Sam.
I was Moderna, and my second shot was a day and a half. It was not great, but do it. You got to do it. This is so a socially responsible thing to do, not just for yourself, but for everybody else.
Damn right, Craig. Now, that's the clip from the show that we need to put at the headline, Mr. Weintraub. Mm-hmm. Everyone get your shot, damn it.
Be a mensch. Be a mensch. Don't be a stooge.
That's, folks, and we will sign off with that. Thanks again for listening to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK and the Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
Yeah.
That was great shit.